On the phone from Thames in the Coromandel, I have Dennis Tegg. He is the spokesperson of Coromandel Watchdog of Hauraki. He's been a member of the group since the early 1980s and has been involved in all the various components of the campaign, bringing communities together, raising awareness, media, peaceful and non-violent direct action, political lobbying, and heaps more in between. He's a lawyer and lives in Thames on the peninsula. Their website is watchdog.org.nz. That's watchdog.org.nz. Kia ora and good morning, Dennis.
Good morning.
Dennis, could you give an overview of what's happening with mining in New Zealand, and then we'll chunk it down to Coromandel in New Zealand?
Sure.
What's happening?
A few months ago, last August, the government announced that it was doing, in their phraseology, a stocktake of minerals on the conservation land in New Zealand. Now, that's quite a large area of land, and it includes national parks and other types of reserves, and it also, in terms of my local area, includes a large proportion of the Coromandel Peninsula in New Zealand. And so they've announced this review. Officials have gone away to sort of look at what areas they believe that could be mined in the conservation estate, and they're about to issue a paper which will be open for public consultation for about 6 weeks. And following that period of consultation, I suppose the government will make its mind up about what areas of the conservation estate would be opened up to mining. And the Prime Minister made a statement in Parliament just a few days ago in which he said, notwithstanding the public consultation process, the government is going to remove some areas out of what is called Schedule 4, which is a schedule in an Act of Parliament, to allow mining in some areas, although he didn't, of course, say which ones yet.
What type of mining are they going to be doing, and what minerals?
Well, it appears as if the two main target minerals are coal and gold. Coal is found mostly in the South Island, and there are areas, even in national parks, which it appears the government is looking at opening up to mining. And then there's the other major mineral is gold, which is found also in the South Island, but also in the Coromandel Peninsula, also in Nelson, which is in the South Island of New Zealand. I mean, there may be other minerals that are maybe smaller in scale in terms of their location, but if you had to name two, I would say it would be coal and gold.
Well, I know that they took out $2 billion worth of gold out of Coromandel, and that's a lot of gold.
You're talking historically?
Since they started in that place, yes.
Yeah, well, of course, mining started on the Coromandel Peninsula here in the 1870s, and there was a sort of a boom-bust period, and much of the Coromandel was mined. There were little mining towns all over the place. But by the turn of the century, the beginning of the 1900s, it was pretty much all washed up, and there have only been a few mines that have continued. One in particular was at Waihee on the Coromandel Peninsula, which was mined until about the 1950s. And then abandoned, and that, of course, was opened up about 20 years ago again.
And as a result, they did leave quite a bit of damage, did they not?
There is certainly some damage. I mean, the old-scale mining was sort of fairly small-scale stuff compared to modern open cast mining. But even so, I could take you into the streams that run down into the town I live in called Thames, and there are streams that flow out of old mining workings from over 100 years ago. And those streams still to this day have acid mine drainage, and so there's very little life in those streams. They run sort of a reedy brown colour with the oxidisation, and they're very high in heavy metals, talking quite toxic things for the environment like cadmium and zinc and lead and arsenic and stuff like that. And in fact, the local town here has several streams quite close by, which could be used for a water supply for the town, and they can't use those streams, so they have to take the water from another valley several kilometres away. And so that's just one example of the ongoing effect of mining, which has lasted 100 years. And that's the major problem with mining in terms of environmental pollution, is this phenomenon called acid mine drainage.
And of course it just goes out into the ocean in the end.
Yes, it does, and there is the risk that heavy metal ends up in the food chain and fish consume it, and it ends up in sort of human consumption. And that's become just in the last week an issue because a mining company has applied for an exploration license in the tidal flats on the foreshore of Thames, and the aim of that license is to recover the gold which was washed down from the old mining days, which was missed by their fairly inefficient recovery methods. And so a guy wants to start pumping that stuff out and processing it and extracting the gold. Now, the problem with that is that it just doesn't have the gold in it. It also has those
heavy metals
that I mentioned, including mercury, which was used in the very early days of gold extraction to extract the gold from the rock. And as you would know, mercury is highly toxic to human health. And if that stuff gets disturbed in the gold extraction process and ends up in the food chain, then there are major, major issues in terms of human health. So this is an area which is a flounder fishery. It has snapper spawn in the area. And just a few kilometres away, there is a multi-million dollar marine farming industry with New Zealand mussels, which are world renowned now, of course. So all those concerns come into play.
So how did this all come into being? I know that in America, when you buy land right to the centre of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Where in New Zealand, you own the top, say, 2 or 3 feet of the land, or first metre, and all minerals, etc. beneath it belong to the government.
Yes, in New Zealand land law, you own the land, but the Crown owns the minerals. Well, most of them, the valuable minerals. And so we now have a law which has improved markedly from when I first became involved in this issue 25 years ago. Under the old Mining Act in New Zealand, basically a landowner had no right of refusal to access by a mining company to come and take the minerals off their land, which was just horrendous sort of in a modern society. But so that law has been changed, and so now every private landowner has the right of refusal of consent unless the minerals are accessed from an adjoining property and there's no disturbance of your enjoyment of the surface, in which case you can't refuse consent. And so that consent process also applies to land which is owned by the Crown. And in that case, the Minister of Conservation, her consent is required to get access to and mine the minerals on conservation land. And that's where the Schedule 4 of the Crown Minerals comes into play, because about 15 years ago, there was a huge upswelling of opposition to mining on the Coromandel and elsewhere in New Zealand. As a result of that campaign, the Schedule 4 was defined, which said, notwithstanding the minister has to give consent, these areas are so valuable and so precious that the minister shall not give consent in these areas. And it's that Schedule 4 which is now under threat from this current review by the government. And the obvious intention is that some areas of land be taken out of Schedule 4 and opened up for mining and for the minister to consent to access.
Dennis, who benefits from all this?
Well, a very good question. We've now had a mining company operating in New Zealand for 20-odd years, just over 20 years, in this town called Waihee. And they have dug this huge open pit almost right in the centre of the town. It's about 200 metres or feet. I can't quite remember how deep it is, but it's a huge hole if you stand on the edge of it. And they have been operating that mine using open cast methods. And they have constructed a tailings dam, and they feed the waste rock and whatever in a large conveyor belt to a processing plant, and then have dumped the tailings from the mine into this tailings dam. So all that's been going on for 20-odd years, and the company is obliged to do a social impact report every couple of years just to gauge what's happening in the community. So this is the company's own report. It has just been issued towards the end of 2009. It was done by the University of Queensland in Australia. And that shows some remarkable results. For example, the levels of people on welfare benefits are double those in Waihee as they are in the adjoining town of Pairoa, which is 10 or 15 kilometres away, and has the same population. And the income levels of people in Waihee are at the low end of the scale, so there are more people on low incomes and on the poverty line living in Waihee than there are in these adjoining towns. So whilst there may be some people who benefit from having a mine like this in their town, and there will obviously be some business people and others, and there's probably quite a lot of money spent in the town, the problem is that those benefits don't actually go to the people who really need it. And so the clear evidence from this report is that there are, in fact, worse levels of social deprivation and poverty in this town than there were sort of even 5 years ago. And so this idea that somehow everyone gets wealthy from mining has just proved not to be the case. And in a way, it's a mirror image, if you like, of what happens with nations. It's called the resource curse, where nations which have oil or gas or minerals often end up actually being poorer than the ones that don't have them for the vast bulk of the population.
And what do you think the government gets out of it?
Well, the government obviously gets some tax revenue from the economic activity, but in terms of direct benefit from royalties, it gets very little. I think the figure is something like $3 to $4 million in royalties for all gold mining in New Zealand last year, which is just a chicken feed. And in fact, the Waihi mine, when it first started, they did a deal with that operator that they pay no royalties. So this open cast operation has paid no royalties for the last 20 years. That has changed now, but even allowing for the change, the direct benefit in terms of royalties to the government is pitifully low.
And wouldn't the mining company write everything off as a tax loss and depreciation?
Well, there have been some examples of that in another mine. I could come to that in a minute. But, I mean, obviously, you know, there are wages paid and so on, and there are some benefits. It's silly to say that there aren't any. The point I'm making is that they don't filter down to the people who really need it. So whilst there's some employment, for example, those are usually highly skilled mining jobs, people who can operate heavy machinery and so on. And what tends to happen is the people who take those jobs come from outside, or they come from Australia or some other mining operation. And the locals, I mean, if you're thinking about a mine like this improving the unemployment level in a town, well, you can forget it. It just doesn't happen. And that's a proven fact from the company's own social impact report.
So the degradation from a mining operation of all the rivers polluted, etc., it could cost $4 million just to clean that up.
Well, in fact, it cost a hell of a lot more than that. We have a prime example of that from a mine on the Coromandel of a town called Tiaraha. It's about 30 or 40 years ago now, I think. That company went broke, and it was mining in the conservation land above the town, and it basically just walked away from the problem. Now, I must say the law has changed a bit and the environmental controls are stricter now, but even so, if you just want to talk about the scale of the problem and how much it costs to fix it, that operation has caused major acid mine drainage, and there are all sorts of problems with the stability of the tailings dam, etc., and it's poisoned the town's water supply. People have been wrangling ever since as to who's going to be responsible for the cleanup, and it's now New Zealand's most hazardous waste